Monster Man, episode 273, Yawklaw and Yuan-Ti. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we're taking a look at the last two monsters from the Y chapter of Monster Manual 2, the 1983 supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. But before we do that, we're going to thank a new Patreon supporter. Yes, this is someone who's gone to patreon.com/monsterman, and they've pledged as little as $1 a month to help support the show. And if, like today's new patron, you pledge at the $2 or higher level, you'll also get the chance to get new episodes, well, and old episodes, I guess. You'll get all episodes of my other podcast, Patron Deities, in which I take a look at the Deities and Demigods supplement and talk about using religion and mythology in your role-playing games. So thank you very much, ABS. Your support means a lot to me. All right, let's start off with the Yawklaw. Now, the Yawklaw is an interesting monster, but there's some aspects of it that get on my nerves that I realize it's not a big deal. But somehow it bugs me. The first thing is that we are told the Yawklaw is a type of demon, but it is inexplicably not in the demon section of the book, which seems like the appropriate place for it? What do I know? But so many different demons are in that demon section that what would one more make a difference, you know? So clearly it sort of was added after that section was already formatted, or somebody just forgot. The interesting thing to me, you know, I had known of the Yawklaw as a monster, but I had never really paid it any attention, and I was surprised to learn that when you think of the Yawklaw, you think of the goop tower form, right? It has this kind of like column of slimy whatever with a bunch of sort of tendrils or limbs coming out of it. But that is not actually its most common form. The Yawklaw can take four different forms. So we've got the goop tower, a sort of column of gas, and then we also have a giant spider or a humanoid, typically an elf, because the Yawklaw are handmaidens of Lolth, the demon spider goddess worshipped by the drow. So one can imagine that, you know, here you are in Lolth's shrine and there are a bunch of, you know, priestesses, but actually they're all Yawklaws in their humanoid form. Or alternatively, that Lolth even sends Yawklaws out as spies to keep an eye on the drow, because the drow are sort of subjugated by their rulers, but also sort of that's their thing and they're into it. So the other forms seem to be the main point, but the image here and the image in subsequent D&D books is definitely the goop tower. Don't ask me why. There's also a line in here which says that they have a very good armor class if they do not take mates, which I can only assume to be a weird typo for if they do not take material form. I think the idea being that, you know, when the Yawklaw is a gas, it's basically impossible to harm. The Yawklaw is an example of a monster that has taken root in D&D, right? Yawklaws are in the 5th edition book. Maybe they're in one of the supplements, I don't know, but they definitely exist in 5th edition. And in fact, I'm pretty sure they're in the main monster manual. And I can only assume that this is because they kind of got swept up in the popularity of Lolth and Drow stuff. Because it's certainly true that the Drow are memorable D&D antagonists. The Yawklaw kind of seem to have come along for the ride, and I know that in later works, particularly like in the novels, they became more characterized, and there were even some sort of sympathetic Yawklaw characters, or a little bit sympathetic anyway. But I'm not completely sold on them. I do think that slime column is pretty weird, and I like that. I think the best way to use them is to start with the other forms, right? If you go into Lolth's temple, then you expect it to be full of drow, and you expect there to be a bunch of giant spiders. That would make sense. And so you're sitting there, you know, polishing your swords of sharpness and putting on your, you know, elven chain plus one or whatever, and you're thinking to yourselves, well, giant spiders, we can handle giant spiders, because we can handle some drow clerics. We just gotta worry if, you know, we actually invoke Lolth in some way. But the joke's on you, suckers. The giant spiders are actually goop towers. I can see that, and I think that can work. Speaking of monsters that have gone on to have a, you know, a real foothold in the D&D imagination, the next monster on the list is the Yuan-Ti. Now, the Yuan-Ti are a society of snake people. I don't mean millennials, I mean literal snake people. That's an old joke by this point. And they come in several different flavors, basically depending on how snaky they are. Now, the Yuan-Ti are not something I'd ever paid an enormous amount of attention to, and I had always assumed that they were a bit like the serpent folk who appear in various authors associated with H.P. Lovecraft. I'm thinking particularly of Robert E. Howard, who describes creatures like this in his story, The Worms of the Earth. But, and that in turn, I think, I want to say, is influenced by Arthur Machen. But the idea that these are the degenerate remnants of a once great serpent civilization, right? That's Volusia. And that comes from Howard, I think, or maybe it comes from somewhere else. I don't know. But the Yuan-Ti in Dungeons & Dragons are actually the degenerate remnants of a human civilization who, through whatever evil magical practices, I guess were trying to get snake powers or something? With the unfortunate result that now they are snake-human hybrids. I think that's pretty good. I do like the idea of a group who are monstrous because of their practices, and I like the idea that the Yuan-Ti are not like a race per se, you know? They are essentially humans who were cursed or who suffered the blowback of some evil magical ritual. Although, if their descendants are also cursed, I mean, I guess that brings the race issue back into it again. Like a lot of other monsters, they made their first appearance in Dwellers in the Forbidden City. There, I think they play quite an important role. I have a notion that there are some Dwellers in the Forbidden City monsters in the Fiend Folio. I'd have to go and look that up, but I think that's right. Aren't Bullywugs from Dwellers in the Forbidden City? And they're definitely in the Fiend Folio. So that's an interesting thing, you know, because Dwellers in the Forbidden City, I think, comes out in its finished form, you know, in 81, the same year as the Fiend Folio. So, you know, maybe some monsters in it made the cutoff and some didn't. But the Yuan-Ti are definitely ones that have stuck around. And they stuck around, I think, for pretty good reasons, specifically just that we have a lot of, like, emotional associations for snakes. And I think humans tend to have quite profound feelings about snakes, and we tend to react interestingly, you know, kind of to the ways in which they are different from us. They're very inhuman. You know, if you look at a dog, it's very easy to project, and maybe you're not even projecting, human emotions onto your dog. Dogs smile. But even if a snake likes you, I mean, how would you tell? I guess it would kind of coil on you, but their faces are just not structured to give us the things that we recognize, and there's something about their appearance that looks kind of aloof. It seems emotionless to us somehow, and that always means that I think snakes are a really good animal analog for creatures who see themselves as being better than those around them. And I think that's definitely the truth of the Yuan-Ti, that they simultaneously consider themselves superior to humans while being incredibly frustrated and disappointed, and indeed angry, by their failure to ascend to whatever snake god thing they were trying to ascend to. And that gives them a whole quest in there, and, you know, you can put them in any situation that you associate with snakes, that, you know, you can do kind of a serpent cult thing, a bit like in Conan the Barbarian, and I feel like there's a lot of possibilities with the Yuan-Ti. As time went on, more and more varieties of Yuan-Ti came into existence. Here we've got basically three, you know, some who are human-y with only a few snaky traits, some who are quite snaky, and some who are basically giant snakes with only a handful of human features. That's fine. It's basically a scale of transformation. And also that kind of implies a narrative as well, right? That initially you're going to encounter the more human-seeing Yuan-Ti acting as, you know, spies or infiltrators or traveling between Yuan-Ti settlements without attracting suspicion, all that kind of stuff. Concealing their snaky features behind helms or veils. You know, there's a lot of good material there. As time went on, more and more different types of Yuan-Ti came into existence, and, you know, ultimately you reach a kind of diminishing returns with that sort of thing. But it gives you more varied enemies to fight in a scenario where you're fighting the Yuan-Ti, where normally you would expect it's going to be these guys and giant snakes and, you know, maybe some mercenaries or something who don't realize they're working for the Yuan-Ti, and then it's kind of it, so fair enough, I suppose. But yeah, the Yuan-Ti are good value for money, and I actually am a little bit surprised to find out that they only appear as late as Monster Manual 2. They must be one of the most successful legacies of this book. Alright, that is about all the monsters that we have time for today. In the upcoming episode of Patron Deities, we're beginning our season on Greek mythology, and in the next episode of Monster Man, we are coming in hot toward the finish line as we begin the Zed chapter of Monster Manual 2, and we're going to talk about not one but two different kinds of zombie here on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons attribution license. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.